We have Mark from Santee, California. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm fine. Hey, Bob, I liked your book, the children's novel.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I had a wonderful time writing it. It was a blast. But
I read it to my son, and he just, every time I read the chapter and ended it for the night, he said, "Can't you go one more chapter?"
Oh, well, that's exactly the reaction I was hoping for. Thank you so much for sharing that. What's on your mind today?
Well, I want to ask you a question. Before I do, I want to make an observation, if you'll give me a moment. One thing I've noticed is that almost all theistic religions have some kind of standards that they believe God has for people to be saved.
Right.
Muslims would say that, well, you got to pray five times a day, observe Ramadan,
yes,
make a pilgrimage to Mecca. The Jews, they all observe the nitpicky laws of the Torah.
Right.
The Roman Catholics, they've got this huge list of things they have to do to appease God, and even if they pray the rosary every day and attend Mass three times a week for their whole lives, most of them still are afraid that God's going to see something they don't like or he doesn't like, and he's going to toss them into hell for eternity. And it goes on and on. Mormons go on missions, get married in the temple, Jehovah's Witnesses knock on doors. And one thing I notice is that Protestants, they say you have to believe just exactly the right things about God to be saved. It's not so much that you have to do these works. You have to believe these certain things. You have to believe that God's part of a trinity, or that Jesus himself is God.
Right.
And so there's always these huge differences between what any one religion or denomination will say are the requirements to be saved and what another one would say.
Right.
So it obviously God has not made it obvious to everyone who he is, or even that he is. Now, there's an awful lot of people that question whether or not he even exists. So that's not obvious. And even if he had made all this obvious and told everybody exactly what he wants us to believe about him and what he expects for each person to be saved, then it still wouldn't be fair for God to judge people on the basis of their beliefs, because, well, they're raised by different people. They've got different opportunities. Some people are raised to be educated and to reason things out, and others are not.
Okay.
So how does God make these judgments?
Okay, well, you're making a lot of good observations, Mark. Let me try to distill it down a little bit, because it sounds like essentially what I hear you asking is, why are we saved based on what we believe, especially if what we should and should not believe is not all that obvious? That
exactly.
Sounds like the essence of it. First of all, the word believe in Greek, the language that the New Testament was written in, did not mean exactly what the word believe means today. We always lose a little bit when we go from one translation to another. And the word believe in ancient Greek, although it included intellectual belief, it essentially meant trust and obedience. So the New Testament writers were not really saying that you can live any way you want, but as long as you believe these things, you'll get saved. What they were really saying is we make a decision to turn from our sin and obey God, and then we get saved. Now, that doesn't mean it isn't God who saves us, and that doesn't mean we're saved by works, because we're not saved by works. When the Bible says we're not saved by works, it means we're not saved by earning merit. In other words, God is not going to shake my hand someday when I get to heaven and say, "Bob Siegel, boy, I was looking for a man like you for a long time. I did not earn my way with God. God came down to this earth as a man, and he died for my sins, and as if that were not enough, he offers me his spirit so that when I go to him, I say, 'God, I want to give my life to you, but my heart is so corrupt that I'm not capable of doing the right thing. And even if I was capable of doing the right thing, I'd be thinking the wrong thing and my motives would be out of whack.'" And that's where the relationship with the Spirit of God comes, and he transforms my heart. But the decision to give God permission to come into our hearts, that decision is what the Bible calls belief. But what they mean there is obedience. We are essentially saved by making a decision to obey God. Now, is it obvious? You're partly right and partly mistaken. It is true that God has made it obvious, but it is also true that human beings have kind of clouded it up so that it doesn't look so obvious anymore. What I mean is the Bible is very clear. A person can read the Bible and can understand what it means. The reason we have different interpretations of the Bible is that a lot of times people don't like what it means, and they change the meaning. and they start movements or churches or cults, and we have followers following people blindly. If a person has enough charisma and is a good enough speaker, people will sometimes follow him or her. But that doesn't mean that they're fairly representing the Bible. But the Bible, if we were to read it the way we would read any other book, with the same laws of literary criticism, that is, reading it in context, understanding that it is translated from a different language, we would find that the Bible has a very simple message. And we kind of clouded up. You were talking about the Catholics. Now, in all fairness to Catholics, on the bottom line, the Catholic beliefs are not that different from Protestants. Catholics technically believe in being saved by faith and not by works, but they've put in so many traditions, and this is an example of human beings kind of clouding it up. They put in so many traditions with the sacraments and the whole thing with the Pope that people almost can't see the forest for the trees anymore. But on the bottom line, Catholics believe that we're saved by faith in Jesus, too, and they're not that much different than the Protestants. And Protestants have their own traditions, too, that kind of cloud things up. Now, let me let you respond. I've given a little bit of response to your question.
Well, we've got all these different denominations and religions, and none of them agree with one another, and they're all reading the same book, or at least the Christian ones are.
Well, they agree on
the same Bible.
They agree on a lot more than you would think. When the Protestant denominations began, there was a very famous meeting called the Westminster Assembly, where they hammered out what's been called the denominational theory, and they agreed on the important things. Who is Jesus Christ? Why did he come? How to be saved? They agreed that there could be different churches, that we could have, and we do have, Presbyterian or Lutheran or Baptist, different kinds of churches. These churches mostly have differences in worship style, in forms of human government within the church. There are some minor theological differences, but these denominations, when they came to America, got along great with each other. In fact, one of the greatest revivals in church history was called the Great Awakening. It happened shortly before the Revolutionary War, and the different denominations cooperated with each other fully. So we don't really have in these denominations accusations that the other people aren't churches. Now, occasionally there's a group called a cult or a sect, and they might call themselves the only true church. But the old mainline denominations, when they were first formed, did not feel that way. And the differences don't always have to do with things that are found in the Bible. Sometimes the differences have to do with cultural or economic things that were going on at the time that the churches were created. For example, Henry VIII was a Catholic. All of England was a Catholic country. Henry VIII wanted to divorce his wife, Catherine, and marry Anne Boleyn. The Pope wouldn't grant the divorce, so Henry said, well, we don't need the Pope. I'll be the head of the church. And that created the Church of England. Now, if somebody wanted to come to me and say, oh, well, the Catholic Church is different from the Church of England, therefore there's a problem with the Bible, I'd say, no, that's not a problem with the Bible. That's a problem with King Henry's marriage. So we need to look at how some of these denominations started also.
Well, it just seems to me that there would be a lot more agreement. If it's important that we know what we're believing in order to be saved, then it should be obvious. It shouldn't be something that one denomination would get this out of reading the Bible or the Quran or whatever, and another denomination would get something else.
Well, again, as far as the denominations go, they do agree for the most part as to that important section, salvation. Now, when you're talking about another religion, such as Islam, that isn't even Christian at all, that's a different story. There we get back to the authority of the Bible. But even then, you're going to find that some of these religions, in a sense, make it very easy for us to make a decision. Islam, with all due respect, does not claim to be an alternative to the Bible, but a sequel to the Bible. Now, I'm not trying to pick on Islam, but since you use that as an example, it's a good example to use. The Quran talks a lot about the Bible. The Quran says that the Bible is the word of God, and the Quran says that Jesus was a prophet of God. But then the Quran says that Jesus was not God. Well, we have a problem, because according to the Bible, which the Quran says is true, according to the Bible, a prophet of God must be accurate in everything he teaches. Well, Jesus taught he was God. If Jesus was not God and he claimed to be God, that would not make Jesus a true prophet. That would make Jesus a false prophet. But the Quran says that Jesus was a true prophet. Therefore, for Jesus to speak truly, he must be God. But the Quran says he was not God. We have a real problem then with the Quran, and the Quran itself goes out of its way to say that we got the Bible first. So I would say that the truth in the Bible is rather obvious, but Muhammad, when he was writing the Quran, claiming to be writing under the inspiration of God, ended up with a very major contradiction. And if we have a contradiction, then we go with what was here first, and the Bible was here first. And for other reasons, the Bible has been authenticated as a factual series of documents.
Okay, well, those are certainly interesting points to think about.
Well, they certainly are, and I very much appreciate that you brought them up. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks for taking my call, Bob.
Take care, Mark.
Bye.